Welcome to the Dellingpod with me, James Dellingpod. And I know I always say I'm excited about this week's special guest, but I really am looking forward to talking to Aislinn O'Loughlin.
Aislinn,
I got it right. I was really... do you know what? If I'd got it wrong or half wrong, it would have just completely cramped my style. And I do have problems with the Irish names. I think they're really good. I like the way that they're pronounced in a completely different way from the way that they're spelled.
I don't know if I believe you when you say that you're really excited to have me on. I've heard you say that before, James.
Yeah, I say it to you all really the girls and the boys.
I hope you mean it this time. You better mean it. Yeah, we have funny names in Ireland. We're a funny old bunch, really. But, you know, we have to make you jump through a few hoops first. And that's kind of the initiation. And that you said it perfectly. So well done.
That's good. I was thinking before, just randomly, before we go into it, I was thinking how dramatically my view of the world has changed on pretty much everything. And I used to think, you know, rebellious Irish, they don't understand all the good things that we gave them, and you know, some of them are really anti-English. I know you're not, but like, what are they whinging about? Don't they realize that they won the lottery in life by having the beneficent British imperial rule and stuff? And why did they blow up all those wonderful ascendancy houses, you know, and during the Civil War, etc., etc.? And now I'm so radical. For example, in the Vietnam War, I sympathized totally with the Viet Cong and the North Vietnamese. I totally understand why the Iraqis fought the Americans so hard. Totally on side with the Taliban. Totally on side. You know, I could almost be singing rebel songs, like, because I think the British Empire was not a good thing.
It was a terrible thing, but I will say this much. Yes, it did leave behind some beautiful architecture in Ireland. It's a shame that, well, we'll say it loosely, post-colonialism, that we didn't do better with our architecture. Because I think, yeah, the Victorian architecture is so beautiful. And it would have been nice to see the Irish go, right, that was good, but we're going to show you even better. But instead, all these housing estates have just gone up everywhere. And, you know, there's a lack of imagination when it comes to town planning. And when
corruption.
You get that, and well, that's it, isn't it?
It's backhanders. You know? One of the things that I love going to rural Ireland, and the thing that always upsets me is that you've got this beautiful countryside, and then in the middle of this countryside is a completely inappropriate white box of a house that has been plonked up there with no joy, no feeling for the landscape, and it's clearly been put up there as a result of backhanders being paid to somebody or other. And it's not just like kind of a one-off. I think the whole of the Irish countryside is like this. It's been blighted by corruption, bad taste.
Well, yeah, bad planning. I mean, I just think as well, it's a lack of real care in who are we? This is what we're all asking ourselves.
Exactly.
Who are we? What do we represent? What is our culture? You know, what are we about? And if you even look at British culture, at least they had this architecture that was something of great beauty.
Yeah.
You know, and I think in our Renaissance, we're going to have a Renaissance, aren't we? We're going to have a Renaissance because we have to have one. That when the leaders come together, and there will have to be those chieftains, we'll have to say, well, who are we? What are we about? What is our planning about? We want to create something that shows off to the world how magnificent we are and how we appreciate the people who live in our little patch. You know, it could be, I'm over in France, but I'm looking at the French too, because I think the French have got this sense, this aesthetic sense of beauty. And I think we have to cherish that, because when you have that, then you've got good food, then you can sit down. It's everything, actually.
Yes.
It's your community. And that's what we're learning, isn't it? We're learning to have our communities again and to ask ourselves, what are we about? Who are we?
Yeah.
What does our nationality mean? I mean, if you look at Ireland, it used to mean being Catholic, following the GAA. And, you know, maybe speaking Irish. But now look what happened with all of this thing, with the jab. So the church said, go get it. And the GAA opened up all their centres for their kids to go in and get jabbed. And now they're all covering up. We've got all these vaccine injuries. No Gaelgor, no well-known Gaelgor stood up and told people, stop, this is something dodgy's going on here. So now that to me says, where are the rebel Irish? Where are they? Who are we? You know, and are we going to put up with this crap? Are we really going to just, you know, watch your tellies and pull the blinds down and pretend it's not happening? So far, that's exactly what people are doing, bar just a few. Nobody else wants to talk about it. I'm here at Christmas. I popped home because my dad had two mini strokes. And I said, you know, I wonder, maybe it's, you know, related to that thing, you know, the thing, mm-hmm. the thing we're not allowed to talk about, the thing I've been banned from talking about this Christmas. And he's been through the ringer, you know, he really has been through a tough time, but no, it's not that. Stop it. Stop. Stop upsetting. You're upsetting me now. I'm upsetting him. I'm like, okay. So I have to be careful now. You know, I'm in my parents' house. I'm kind of watching my words here. I've put myself into the garage. If they hear that I'm doing like my rebel stuff, but I can't stop. I've got three children. My mother said to me the other day, she's like, what do you care what happens in Ireland? You're over in France. I says, because it's all connected. It's the World Economic Forum. It's a global thing. What's happening here is happening in France. It's happening in the UK. It's happening in Germany, Italy, Spain. We're all connected. It's happening in Canada, United States, New Zealand, Australia. So I'm interested in it. I'm interested in it from an international perspective. Also, because I spent nearly 20 years within the mainstream media, I absolutely have a moral obligation to warn people that the media is captured and that it's bought and paid for. And they need to know that because they don't understand that it's now a big pharma-funded industry. They're not getting the news. They're getting propaganda. And you know what kills me when I'm over here? They're still promoting the vaccine as if nothing's happened, as if there are no vaccine injuries, as if people aren't just dropping dead for no reason, because the doctors are baffled, aren't they? And we're not allowed to talk about it. Just don't be negative. We can't have you being negative at Christmas time because you could wreck Christmas, and we just can't have that, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Well, look, we've got to talk about the mainstream media because we were both once part of it. Tell me, I mean, in Irish terms, you are, who would be your English equivalent? You were quite a thing in the mainstream media.
I wasn't
you?
Really. I was around about. You would have kind of half known me a bit. You know, you probably would have got my name wrong, actually. Okay. I kind of compare myself to one of the Pussycat Dolls members who kind of turned up every now and again. Yeah. So I was known-ish. I was never ultra famous or anything, but so I studied journalism for 4 years in DCU, which is Dublin City University, went on to local radio, Clare FM, Limerick Evening Echo, then went on to TV3, which is national news. And I used to read the news badly. I'd try and read autocue from my eyesight was like, so I'd be trying to read autocue because I was a young one, you know, they wanted nice shiny hair, read your autocue like a good girl. And of course, it was a big deal for me to be on the telly. It was a great big deal reading my autocue and trying to do it as well as possible. So I was trying to figure out an awful lot of things. I spent 6 years in the newsroom reading the news and then going out reporting on the news. So that helped. I had a good idea of news by the end of that. I used to be the weekend news reader as well. And then I used to fill in on a lot of shows. So again, my face be well enough known. And then I joined an entertainment show called Exposé, funny kind of name now, all things considered.
Yeah.
And we traveled the world interviewing celebrities. So I got to see the celebrity industry, you know, the nuts and bolts of the entertainment industry on the red carpet for the Oscars, the BAFTAs, backstage, fashion industry, got to interview all the celebs. So then I had three babies. And that was kind of the end of it. By the time I was on my third pregnancy, it was like, right, you're taking the mickey. And I also couldn't. You can't have three kids and keep up that pace. You know, something's got to give. So then I moved to France. Well, no, then I worked for the Irish Mail on Sunday as a columnist. And I used to do their fashion pages too. And I did that for around 4 years. And then this thing hit. And I could see in all the newspapers all over the world, and you're kind of expecting different personalities from different newspapers. Suddenly, as I was looking at all the headlines from around the world, I was like, this is very peculiar. They're all saying the same thing. How can they all be pushing this jab? This doesn't make any sense. So I was looking again. I'd go back again and I'd have a look at all the news because I'm a news junkie. You know, you like to see what's happening all over the world. And as I would compare and contrast and cross-reference all the headlines, I was like, we're in deep shit. They're all saying the same thing. I'd never seen anything like it. This is when the penny was dropping for me. It's like they're all saying this is red alert, you know?
Yeah.
And the thing is, like, I was writing for the Mail and Sunday. They'd always given me leeway to write what I liked, and they were always a pleasure to write for and work for. But I even noticed that on the cover of the Mail, it was like, get the jab. Remember that headline? It was on every newspaper. Get the jab, get the jab, get the jab. And I thought, this is immoral. This is an ethical issue, and that's wrong because it's an experiment, number one. You can't tell people to take part in an experiment. You cannot do that. Plus, if you do a very basic risk-benefit analysis, the damn thing had a 99.7% survival rate. It looked like the flu, it walked like the flu, and it was in the same category as the flu anyway, with the same survival rate, and all in line with flu deaths. So we didn't have a pandemic. We had a case-demic based on the faulty use of the PCR test. We had this whole body of evidence which was being censored, and I knew I had to drop it. So I started this thing on Instagram stories. We got this fantastic conversation going really fast. And you know what it's like? This has been the best education of our lives, hasn't it?
Totally.
And when you're exchanging information at a rapid rate and you're flying, because as a journal, you're used to flying through information anyway. But when it's coming in from all angles rapidly and you get to see what's worth looking at, what's not worth looking at, what's got any weight to it, you're looking at the characters of the people who are speaking. So we've got like Dr. Fauci. Who is this guy? What kind of a character is this fellow? You start looking at his character and you're like, oh, dodgy, dodgy. And then you look at the character of somebody like Dr. Kerry Mullis. You think, wait, this guy's cool. You know, he won the Nobel Prize for his invention. And look what he's saying. He was saying about Dr. Fauci. He looked right down the lens and he would lie. And these guys, you know, they have an agenda and it's not in our interest. So thank you to Dr. Kerry Mullis for leaving that behind, that legacy. He warned us. And I knew we have to, I had to drop everything. I dropped everything nearly 3 years ago and threw myself into this. I've got three kids. I'm not handing down a legacy where Pfizer, Bill Gates, Mr. Depopulation are running the show. Yeah. We are going to cut the head off the dragon if it's the last thing we do. And the big difficulty we have is waking people up. Because they don't want to wake up. They don't want to hear it. We're making them anxious. Because guess what? This is bloody negative. It is negative. And if we don't stand up and adult up and figure this out fairly quickly, we're in deeper doo-doo. And then we hand that down to our kids. We can't do that. We have to face our fears.
Oh, my heroine. I love you. It's so weird, though, isn't it? That I don't know about you, but when I was at number one, when I was in the mainstream media, and that was most of my career, I never for a moment suspected that it was an evil lie machine, that it was serving interests other than those of the readership. I mean, okay, I recognise that proprietors had their biases and so on, but I fully subscribe to the narrative that there were left-wing newspapers, you know, advancing the case for smaller government and lower tax and so on. And then there were left-wing newspapers talking about all the kind of trade unions and feminism and whatever, and that they were both honestly held points of view. It never occurred to me that this was all a psyop that designed to deceive us and enforce an agenda, to push an agenda which we didn't understand and was advanced in a kind of subtle, subliminal way. Did you get that at all?
Well, you see, the thing is this, like when TV3 started, it was just about survival. It was all these tiny budgets, you know? So we were just trying to make TV on small budgets. So you can only imagine what that looked like. And it got better and better. And now it's owned by Virgin Media. It looks like a spaceship now when you go in. It's slick. There's money. There's a budget. So I think what happened with the media, and this is a big deal, what happened with even the doctors and everybody, these guys know what they're doing. They back you into a financial corner, and then they offer you a kind of a devil's deal, you know? So this is what the media did. They've all signed, they've all done a bargain with the devil.
Yeah.
And the doctors have done one too. And it's not worth the money. It's not worth it, your soul. It's blood money. You know, that's the problem. Yeah. And it doesn't matter. I mean, the devil pays well. And I know you've been kind of down this path yourself where you realize this thing is a spiritual war. When you, 'cause as journalists, what we do best is we can simplify things. So we can go through a whole load, process a load of information and then say, well, what's the top line or what's the bottom line, right? Because that's what journalists do. And then we have to simplify it and lay it out plainly. And that for me, when I get down to the brass tacks of this whole thing, I'm like, it's spiritual. It's a spiritual war.
You've gone straight for the money shot there, Aisling. I was working it, you know, I was doing all the foreplay first. And you've just gone. I mean, you are absolutely right, of course. And it's been a very bizarre realization for me that the world is pretty much operated on the lines that the Bible said it is. That this is the realm, particularly the New Testament is clear on this, that this is the realm of the Prince of Lies. And once you understand that, everything becomes much more comprehensible, because you realize, well, okay, this guy is the most devious, mendacious person who's ever lived. I mean, he's not even human. He's a kind of, he's a fallen angel. So he's pretty good at his job. And his job is, as we saw in plays like Dr. Faustus, it's to encourage us into his web of sin by encouraging us to make these bargains, by seducing us with his wiles. And just before we get dragged screaming down to hell, we realize that maybe this bargain wasn't worth it after all. But most people seem to have fallen for it, because I don't know why didn't we? Because going back to that point about the mainstream media, why didn't all the colleagues that we imagine would be stand-up guys and girls when Armageddon came, we'd be fighting shoulder to shoulder in the shield wall against the forces of darkness. Why are they all buggered off?
I'll tell you why. Because we've got real morals. We understand ethics and we know what's right from wrong. And it's clear. For me, this was never complicated. It's not a complicated issue. And again, the devil's work likes to overcomplicate really simple stuff and bamboozle you, you know. Oh, you know, the virus. And then you go, wait a sec, it's got 99.7% survival rate. Stop. Do you know? Oh, you know, the case numbers are up. Wait. The PCR test only gets cold and flus. Nobody's isolated this thing. Wait, hold on a minute. We could have, it was very easy. Now, unfortunately, obviously, the media and the doctors were in, so people got confused. And I think people don't trust themselves either. Like, we are conditioned from birth to believe doctors' orders, you know? Mm. And if the doctor says so, I mean, that's why I vaccinated my own children when they were babies.
Yeah.
Because I said to my doctor, I was
what
like,
what were you thinking?
I know, what an idiot. So we've learned a lot. So we have learned a lot too. We have learned an awful lot. So, and there's always room for redemption. You know, there is always room for people to go, okay, I screwed up. I screwed up with my own babies. I didn't do my due diligence. I sat there, I looked at my GP in the eye and I said, I'm not sure about this. Should I do it? And she said, absolutely. They're safe and effective. Do it. You know, that's what good mothers do. So it's the same playbook. Yeah. What I should have done is looked at, say, Dr. Vernon Coleman, who now is like total legend, man. Yeah. I mean, what a doctor. Should have read his books. I should have looked at the censored people. And, you know, I think the alarm bells are going off right, left and center. And people don't want to know. But they should have looked at who was censored. All these people disappeared. All the good doctors, scientists, journalists. And there's very few, really, when it came down to it. Very few. But we were very lucky in Ireland. We had like a top virologist. No matter what you'd say about virology, and I know it's under the microscope whether there's such a thing or not. But we had Professor Dolores Cal, world-renowned virologist, who came out in advance and told the people of Ireland, don't touch that. And she got smeared in the papers. And then people say, I don't trust her. She's controlled opposition. You know this? Like, she's just telling you not to take, what do you want of her? She's just trying to save you, bastards, you know?
Yeah.
And no, they'll come out with everything. Controlled opposition, or she's Dublin virology, or she's curly hair, or so, whatever it is. I'm like, she's just put her whole career on the line, her neck on the line, to save the people of Ireland, and they ignored her. Very annoying.
I think so many, she was one of the first podcasts I did, one of the first sort of stars of the plandemic that I managed to get hold of very early on. I was very pleased to have done so, very grateful. And she was so ahead of the game. And I'm sure that lots of people listened to that podcast and didn't get the jab as a result. So even if she is controlled opposition, which I don't think she is, but it, I mean, as you said in one of your Telegram chats, it doesn't. We can talk about that in a moment. But I thought she did really, really good work. She was so far ahead of the game because she was talking about this stuff long before it was even being suggested that a vaccine was going to be available in time. She knew what was coming, and at a time when they were still saying stuff like, well, it takes at least 10 years to develop a vaccine, and the newspapers were still touting that line, weren't they? It was never an issue that people were going to get vaccinated for this particular alleged pandemic.
Just bananas. I mean, who takes a free, all right, even the whole free thing, who takes a free jab from the guy who wants to depopulate the planet using fake vaccines? Like, are you mad? When I was starting on Instagram doing the thing, I was like, just don't do it. And then you'd get, well, you're not a doctor. You're not an expert. Who? Oh, you think you're smarter than the doctors, do you? I'm like, no, let's just get it down to brass tacks again. Do you know what the journals do? There's a guy who wants to depopulate the planet. His name is Bill Gates. He said it openly. Here's a clip. You know, look at him saying it. Reducing carbon and all of that, using vaccines. He's offering you a free vaccine. What do you say? What is your answer to that?
Yeah.
And people are like, yeah, the doctor told. No is the answer. How did anybody say yes? Now, this is a big problem. Does humanity deserve to go on? If humanity is this thick, I'm not just talking about the Irish, the English, all the people who signed up. And we know they went to Cambridge and Oxford and Trinity College, Dublin. We know all these with letters after their names, certificates up on the wall. And the guy who wants to depopulate the planet with vaccines offers them a free jab. And all these really smart people, what do they say? Roll up the arm, stick it in, stick it in, stick it in, stick it in again and again. It's like, no, does humanity even deserve to stick around if this is the level of intelligence from our best, led by the doctors who all went, they were how long? 7-8 years in university?
Mm.
So they're supposed to be the smartest.
Yeah. I was just thinking, there must have been a very, very narrow window between your being a kind of a trusted TV voice of authority and you being cast into outer darkness when people realised that you were a tinfoil hat loon. Because they're quite clever, aren't they? The way that we know how susceptible people are to media influencers. And as soon as they find out that a media influencer is giving out the wrong message, you just get chucked instantly into outer. Did that happen to you?
Well, you see, I've kind of gone anyway. You know, right. I'd moved to France. I'm not that interested in it. Because I'd done all the fame game thing, talking to celebrities, and you see the nuts and bolts of the whole thing. I wasn't that interested. After doing it for so long, I thought, I don't want attention like that, you know? And I don't want to, even the whole idea of people who think they're famous, it's annoying. They're kind of annoying, celebrities.
Well, yeah.
So it's an annoying because you think you're better than somebody else and you're resting up. It's all me, me, me. I was finished with it, you know, so it didn't matter. So I was happy to blow up the Instagram account anyway, because I kind of knew it was going to blow up at some point. And it was like a self-detonation, really, because we just kept pumping out stuff. But yeah, I mean, at one point, you know, I came back and my parents said, get up, get back through the back door of the house. They didn't want me, you know, walking down the road or, you know, because people were coming for me with pitchforks. I wasn't popular. This was not a popular thing. I was trending once on Twitter, and everybody was just like going for me when I spoke about it initially. It said, stop, this isn't even, you know, who does she think she is? She's not a doctor. She's not an expert. How dare this one who's like backing singer and on expose, you know, turn up from France as well. She's not even in Ireland and deign to give medical advice. But for me, it was just so simple. It's simpleton stuff, you know. It really is, because that's our job. Break it down. This is not complicated.
It is when you know. I mean, once you know, you cannot unknow. Mm. But so all our former colleagues, do they really not know? What's your theory on this?
I think they're covering their asses and their assets. And I think that's what most people are doing. I think the whole vaccine safe and effective thing has worked as a kind of a brainwashing tool. So I don't know how bad they are. Like, do they act? No, they, at this point, it's actually unforgivable what's happened.
Mm.
It's really unforgivable. When I was doing that Instagram campaign, I said, push back the chairs and walk away. Have no part in this. Have no part in it. Don't continue to read the autocue. Don't do it. And some did. Some people, and it wasn't anything to do with me, it was their own conscience. It can only be your own conscience, because this is a soul test. You want to keep your hands clean from any, you know, from that blood money, and you want to keep your soul clean. And it's a choice. This is why somebody was having it. We were having a great conversation in the comments the other day in Telegram, and somebody was saying that the earth, whatever it is we're on here, is a realm of justice. But why injustice is allowed to go on for so long is to give people the opportunity of free will.
Yes.
So what we are looking at here is people have chosen to stay in a tyrannical system. People have chosen to turn their heads and pretend, feign ignorance. We know a lot of people got very rich quick out of this. A lot of doctors.
Yes.
They got very rich. So I think, again, because this is kind of devil's deal, the money was too tempting. I know a lot of people with big followings didn't want to blow up their Instagram accounts. Mm-hmm. They wanted, because they're attached to that idea of they're famous and liked and validated. And they make money out of it too. You know, so that it's their income. Their income's attached and their worth is attached to like the people who like and follow them. So they're just, you know, this is so spiritual that part of it is blowing up your egoic, a connection to your following or how you're presented to the world as well.
Yeah, that certainly makes sense of a lot of the, I'm not going to name names because it's too personally painful to me to see my friends shit the bed, you know, I keep using the foxhole analogy. You're trying to hold the perimeter. And the enemy is surrounding you, and you're very much dependent on the person next to you to hold the line, because the fewer of you there are, the more you are personally exposed, and the more fighting you've got to do. And most of my comrades that I thought were better than me abandoned their positions. And I was struck by what you said earlier. I don't want to blow smoke up our own bottoms or feel smug or anything. So I don't feel particularly smug, but you said it's a kind of spiritual test. It's a moral test. I never thought of myself as a particularly super moral person before all this. Did you?
Well, I always said when I left the thing, I said, I'm not a genocide kind of girl. Do you know what I mean? I mean, yeah. I'm not a goody goody two shoes. I like a drink. I like the crack, you know.
Yeah.
It's not like I was going telling on people, you know. I'm not like a telltale tattler or anything like that. I can keep a secret.
Yeah.
I like to have a bit of fun.
Yeah.
But this is different. Wait a second. This is totally different. This is grim. This is black. This is dark. People are dying. Babies are dying. We have a doctor here in Ireland who's on the radio, has a national position. She told pregnant women to take the experimental jab and still hasn't batted an eyelid, still hasn't said sorry. She's still on air with Professor Luke O'Neill, who's told everybody to get it and is on constantly. He's from Trinity College Dublin, funded by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, but nobody is allowed to talk about that. Yes. And it was even on the Trinity College Dublin website. Don't know if they've scrubbed it now, but it was there when you looked at funding. You could easily find it. And he was the only guy allowed on air.
Yeah.
So one-sided narrative. Bill and Melinda Gates funded. And guess who was on the cover of the Sunday Indy the other day talking about the strip? All those kids dying, very, very sad. And there he was again, Professor Luke O'Neill. So where are we winning? When these guys, these main players who are guilty, they should be in jail because of the amount of people now who have died. And we know we have the connections, we have the evidence, we have everything that we need to put them in jail. We've got a big problem. Judiciary is stacked. The cops are working for the WEF.
Yeah.
So how do we get justice now? Unless we get more people together.
You said it's a spiritual war, but it's also an information war, isn't it? Which is why we should be top fighters, you and me, because like it's our stock in trade, isn't it?
We just have to keep going. At some days you do get tired. You know, I get attacked sometimes. You know, usually it's a very good conversation. All the rest. Sometimes people come on, they're like, you're a shill and you're controlled opposition. I'm like, I'd love to know who's paying me. Mm. Jeez. Talk about, when I'm at home here, so I'm not allowed to talk about the vaccine, but they're not allowed to talk about what I'm doing with my career. So we're only allowed to talk about certain subjects back home. But yeah, you know, you can get attacked, but that's par for the course too. And I often find your worst critics are the ones that teach you the most. Do you ever find that?
Oh, right. Oh, tell me more about this. I probably will agree with you. I hadn't really thought about it before.
Well, if somebody just really goes for you and then you have to go away and mutter to yourself and then you think about something, then you have to think about it harder. Then you might have to go and do a bit more extra research. Then you might have to learn something better, you know, because you mightn't have expressed yourself properly. And I always find those critics that bug you and annoy you, they kind of push you further. They create a friction and we kind of need them too. You know, especially with the Instagram thing, I let everybody in. So it was an absolute mess really. But I did find those trolls or even just people who didn't understand or criticized. I always felt that they actually really added to the conversation when you really allow it.
Do you know what, Aisling? I was thinking about what you just said and I was thinking, actually, the people who get, I find our enemies, as it were, so despicable and so low grade that I don't really think about them very much. The people that I spend far more time fighting with, actually, are people on our side who don't quite get it. Because and this is a shameful confession in a way, because obviously we should be united. And yet, I think unless people on our side are encouraged to think rigorously, and I see my job partly as a kind of irritable Oxbridge tutor, you know, having a tutorial and expecting people to come properly prepared, or they can just bugger off because then they're wasting my time. For example, the people who still believe that Q and the white hats are going to come and save us, and that Hillary Clinton has not just been arrested, but she's been tried 3 years ago and she's been executed by secret military tribunals. These people are not really helping our argument, I don't think.
I know, and I want to believe it so much though. Do you ever find that? It's like, I want to believe Diana's coming back and JFK didn't die and, you know, the Queen's
it's
a lizard.
Porn.
I mean, I really, there's a part of me and I want to believe the white hats are saving us and that, you know, Donald Trump had to do it. What was it? He had to bring in Operation Warp Speed, because if he didn't, there would be perpetual lockdowns. But when you kind of think about it, you're like, what a load of nonsense, perpetual lockdowns. Give me a break. He didn't have to bring it in. He didn't have to do Operation Warp Speed.
No.
He didn't have to do any of it. But it is very weird. I will say this much. And I do have a lot of Q friends. And I do think they're not stupid.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is what's got me. They're not stupid. So I annoy them by saying no, no, no. But I'll still listen. So it's good to have them around. There's something weird going on. Like, is Biden the real Biden? He looks very weird. Is that just plastic surgery?
No, there's loads of them. I do believe that one. I do believe that there are lots of body doubles. And you've seen the Hillary Clintons. I mean, that they vary in height by several inches. It's obvious that
so something is going on, for sure. There is some kind of operation, but I just wonder, You know, they say it's the greatest sting operation of all time. But who's going to be left standing by the end of this sting operation? Looks like everybody's going to be depopulated at this point. Well, we don't know. I mean, it's very hard to know, but something peculiar is definitely going on. Is not as it seems.
I totally agreed with which is the piece that inspired this chat. And I'm so glad I had you on. It's great meeting a kindred spirit. The piece you wrote about how one shouldn't waste too much time trying to work out who is controlled opposition, who's a limited hangout, who is a gatekeeper, and who's one of us. Judge people on what. Take the good from what you find useful and discard the rest. Is that a fair summary of your...
That's it, because we all are honing our discernment skills now, aren't we?
Yeah.
So you kind of have to try and figure what rings true. You know, certain things ring true, and then you do your rigorous testing to see, does that actually ring true? So, yeah, like somebody like Elon Musk, we have to take this kind of these Twitter... What are they called again? The Twitter files. Obviously, he's doing great work, but yes, he wants to chip us. His mom's weird. She's doing all that stuff. He's clearly part of some kind of Luciferian something or other going on there. Maybe he's
satanic bloodlines, and he dressed up as Baphomet on Halloween.
Yeah.
That was kind of a clue. And the inverted cross. I didn't look at that inverted cross and go, yeah, maybe he's one of the good guys. Maybe he's trying to tell us that he's a Christian. And he's invoking Saint Peter, is it, who was crucified upside down to show his... Maybe that's what he's doing.
Well, I mean, this is it. So I'm not going to get too excited about Elon. At the same time, I'm having a little look over there. I'm like, oh, that's interesting. But I know what they're doing. They're trying to corral people, you know, and they're trying to bring back Donald Trump. And it's supposed to be like bad guy Biden versus good guy Trump. Yeah. And it's like, come on, we're not kids at a pantomime. It's not like he's behind you. You know, that's what it feels like sometimes, that we are being treated as these pantomime theatrics. And, you know, it's hard because you really do want to, you want the hope, you need the hope. But again, I just think it goes back to the Bible. Get on your knees and say your prayers. And, you know, we need divine intervention.
Were you like this? Obviously, being Irish, you were bound to have been raised a Catholic. No.
No. No, my mother's Protestant. My father's Catholic.
Right.
So I was very lucky. So my mother was supposed to sign some papal document to say that she was going to bring us up all Catholic because she was marrying the Catholic. But being a proddy, she said no. So we were brought up Church of Ireland. And then I had kind of a mixed upbringing because my father's side were all Catholic. So I had all the Catholic stuff, did the proddy stuff. And then went off and did my own searching with the born-again Christians. So I was like dedicated little Christian, I would say, from a very young age. And then when I became a teenager, I stopped the whole thing. Handbrake up. I'm going to have some fun.
Yep.
And kind of veered off then. You know, when you study journalism, it's quite intellectual and academic. You're reading books. You're trying to pretend you're smart. Yeah. You know, you're trying to keep up with the big guys, big boys and girls. And then this hit, and it's like, this is unbelievable. This is like everything we've been told is not true. We've been told the devil doesn't exist. We've been told Jesus was not here. It's all in our imagination. But when it comes down to when you start doing the pairing work again, it goes down to the devil and Jesus. It's like, wait a second. Then people say, no, he didn't exist. He wasn't here. He wasn't here. So that message keeps coming through. So I go looking again. They say, look, it's this archetype of Jesus. It's an archetype. But the more I go into it, the more I think he was here. I think he was. I think he matters. And I'm open. I remain open. I listen to a great guy called Thomas Sheridan. He's a pagan. I listen to him more or less every day because he's a brilliant mind. But it keeps going back to the Jesus thing for me.
I don't know whether he came to Ireland, but he definitely came to England with Joseph of Arimathea, because we know because William Blake wrote a rousing hymn about it.
Really?
Well, did they speak in ancient times, walk upon England's mountains green? I'm teasing.
Oh, you're so mean. I want to believe it.
Ashley, I do think it's a possibility. Yeah. In fact, just before all the craziness kicked off, I was trying to work out, you know, how to make a living in a world where the mainstream media was just really so shit it wasn't worth, you know. I mean, I was aware of the MSM's decline before this. And I was thinking, wouldn't it be and somebody's welcome to rip off this idea, wouldn't it be really good having a kind of a series for teens, maybe on Netflix, about Jesus's early years in it would have been Roman Britain, wouldn't it? He would have come over with maybe Joseph of Arimathea or somebody. He would have hung around at Glastonbury maybe, and he'd have been doing things like fighting dragons and fighting and you know, the devil would be constantly trying to undermine him and trick him, knowing he was Jesus and stuff. And I think it'd be really cool.
I don't know if you can mess with Jesus really in the story.
Well, you know what I mean? We don't know much about his. So the New Testament fast forwards fairly quickly. You get the scenes where, I love the scene where his parents manage to lose him for a couple of days, and they find him in the temple, talking to the elders and sort of lecturing. And I think up until that point, they hadn't really worked out that he was really, really, because Jesus had brothers and sisters, didn't he? He's only had brothers.
Yeah, I know. I have a friend who's totally into the early days of Jesus. You see, I've just kind of gone back. I've started reading the the Gospels. And then every day I open the Bible randomly.
Yeah.
And I get the message. It's really weird.
You do? No. But have you noticed, Ashley, that you'll get, so you talk, I mean, I love talking about this stuff, right? Because it's really exciting. It's like discovering this new hobby, except it's the best hobby in the world. I mean, it's even better than fox hunting, and that's a pretty impressive thing for it to be.
Stop it.
And you talked about, and there's all sorts of exciting things you can discover and talk about, and it's wonderful accumulating this knowledge. But what you find, you must have noticed this, is that there's a certain type of Christian who tells you, no, you mustn't do that. You mustn't play games with the Bible. That's divination. And the Bible enjoins us not to indulge in divination. I'm thinking, no, hang on a second. One of the coolest things, if not the coolest thing about Christianity, is it's real. This stuff is not made up shit. This is actual, this is better than magic. This is God magic. And God is real. The devil is real. And if you look in the Bible, at random pages, you get a message. Now, what is wrong with that? That's a good thing. It shows that stuff works. And I think
we
need
that. Well, it's quite funny, because talking about divination, so I've got this pendulum thing that I picked up in a health food store.
Yeah.
Because my friend was using one. I was like, what's that thing? You can only ask it yes or no questions.
Yeah.
So then I thought, you know, because when you're reading the Bible, you're like, is it a good thing? Because you're afraid of astrology and all of this, you know. So then I was stirring the thing to see, because it goes right to say yes and left to say no. So I says, would Jesus be okay if I use this thing? So then it was like, yes, it's okay. So then I asked, well, was Jesus actually here? Yes. But it's quite funny. The things I get out of this pendulum swinging, does the devil exist? And it'll give me yes or no. And it'll give a big yes. It'll give me a big swinging yes. So anyway, there I go. I'm kind of tapping into that kind of thing too. I've always been interested in everything. I mean, that's journalist for you, you know?
Yes. I mean, that's why, isn't that, look, I don't know about you. I went into journalism for two reasons. One, I wanted to hang out with famous people. And two, I'm curious, and I'm not, also three, I'm not suited to any grown-up job. I like a naughty boy. I want to find out stuff that people don't want me to find out, which is why, just going back to our early conversation, we'll go back to the Jesus stuff in a bit. But, I don't understand, this is the thing that really puzzles me about my journalistic colleagues and yours presumably as well, is how can they not be curious about what's really going on? Every day I discover new crazy shit about the world that I want to tell everyone about, because it's an amazing discovery. How can our entire profession, pretty much, or our entire trade, rather, have suppressed that natural curiosity to find out the truth and stick it to the establishment. How can they all become these establishment shills?
I think it's just plain old simple money. I think the money's too good to say no to. I think there's no excuse for it. There's no excuse because it was so plain. It was so simple, the whole thing. It's not like they couldn't have known. It's not like they didn't know or that they couldn't know or that a little 5-minute proper search conversation wouldn't have shown them or that how are they cool with tyrannical censorship? When did they get okay with a one-sided narrative?
Yeah.
This is exposing people's characters, the people that we allow in our sitting rooms, our televisions, you know. You know, you look at UK TV, breakfast TV, and they're still pushing it, you know. They're shameless. It's utterly unethical, shameless, and just bad, you know. And as you say, it's low grade. And the thing is, you know, we talk about Jesus, but then there's the other element that we're going from 3D to 5D. And yeah, well, maybe the whole 5D thing is something as well that we can also counter into this. 5D, people just won't be able to lie. It'll be too clear. It'll be obvious. It'll be written in their faces. We're going through this amazing, incredible age of unveiling.
Yes.
We are seeing people for who they are, for what they are, what kind of characters they have. We're seeing how frightened people are, too. There's a lot of anxiety. People are like, I'm too anxious, I'm too afraid, and I don't want to know bad stuff.
You know what the Greek word for unveiling is, the biblical word.
Apocalypse.
Yes, exactly. So we're living in the apocalypse.
Yeah, we are. It is. That is what it is.
Okay.
And it's been good, though, in its own disgusting way. I prefer to know, don't you? I prefer to know. I'm not going to waste time on people who have no ethics. I'm not going to waste time on people who are okay with genocide or killing babies, you know, all these miscarriages because they told people to pregnant women to get this injection. I'm not okay with people who are okay with this satanic agenda. So they can feck right off.
Yeah, except our job is to forgive them. Look.
Oh, yeah.
Do you not worry?
Yeah, that's it.
Reading, knowing the New Testament as you do, there's the key section, is it in Mark, where he talks about straight is the gate and how very few are chosen. And this seems to me to be very akin to the relationship that the awake have generally with the world. And I think it's no coincidence that a lot of awake people are discovering God. Or rediscovering God.
Mm.
I had an event the other day in London and with Danny Rampling DJing. I mean, I couldn't believe it. Imagine how cool that would be. If I could have gone back in time 20 years and said, Danny Rampling will be DJing at your private party for these really incredible people that you love and they love you and you're all on the same trip and it's fantastic. I thought, no, that's not going to happen. That ain't going to happen.
Fantastic.
I mean, maybe this is it. Maybe there are never going to be many of us. And maybe that's the way of things. I mean, maybe we're not going to be able to spread the message because most people, it's like the parable of the sower, that a lot of the seeds are going to fall on shallow ground, on arid ground. Some are going to fall among thorns and so on. What if it's just going to be a few of us? Then we'll never get the message across to everybody else.
Well, I mean, the message is going to come out one way or the other because you can't hide it for too much longer. I mean, everybody's taking part in the trial. People are dropping dead. Birth rates are down. The overall excess mortality rate is up. So there's only, you know, there's only so long you can keep the lie hidden. And also the liars are tripping over their own lies, too. So I think people will know. They will know. We try to give them the way out. An easy route out, really and truly, because they could have said no collectively earlier. If they had it, we wouldn't have been. We keep going deeper into the doo-doo the more they acquiesce and comply with tyranny. But at some point, there will be repercussions. Well, karma's going to kick in.
We can see that coming already. I mean, you've been following the story. Did you see that Twitter thread about Alberto Burla?
Burla,
the head of Pfizer, who's I think is. Part human, part reptilian. So have you seen he's got this neck like a bullfrog or like an,
I get
like
that. I get a bit of that like too. After too many Baileys.
Anyway, he is clearly setting up his R&D department for a fall. They're gonna blame there are going to be some fall guys within the death jab industry, and the rest of the jab industry, the big pharma is going to say, we had no idea that these vaccines might be toxic. We thought they were safe and effective, and we just put them out in good faith to save the world. And now it seems that our naughty R&D department didn't give us the full story. And what could we do? Clearly, they're going to have to be punished. So I think that they are aware that we've reached a point where they cannot hide this vaccine injuries from the public anymore. The dam is about to burst. So they're preparing for that stage. And what's going to happen is that there's going to be a kerfuffle over, you know, who knew what and what should be their punishment. And while the normies, let's call them, are being distracted by this story, the bad guys are just going to be doing heaps of other shit that the public are going to be completely oblivious to, because they're going to be so focused on the vaccine thing.
Oh, I know. But you know, this is the good thing. We've wrecked it. We wrecked their plan. People like us with big gobs, with a microphone, turned our cameras around on their phones, said no. We wrecked their plan, said this is not safe and effective. This is an experiment. This is a trial. That guy's a crook. We wrecked their plans all over the world. People like us did that. So we can congratulate ourselves on that. So now when they come out and say, oh, gee, shucks, we didn't know, they did know. And the jabbed will look to us and go, oh, my God, they're not as awful and crazy and far right conspiracy theorists that we thought they were. They were actually our friends throwing themselves under the bus to save us. That's who we are. And that's going to be a very humbling moment for all those people who took part in the trial that we tried to save, did everything we could possibly. And hopefully, another thing that we did, because when I was out at a talk one time, a doctor came up and the doctor said, thank you for speaking out, because I went and did extra research. And then she didn't, you know what I mean? So there's, when we speak the truth, it does open portals everywhere and it has wonderful repercussions. So I am hoping that there's untold doctors out there who didn't want to risk their license, but who were just giving out saline solution. They were just, that was the injection they were giving out, who said, I'm not putting that in people's arms. So I'm hoping we're going to have that plot twist as well.
Yeah. Look, I really like, I'm going with your theory, at least in my head. I love the idea that we're heroes and that, like,
we're
the 300 holding Thermopylae against, although, what happened to the 300 in the end against the...
But this is it. This is why we go in knowing, you know, we go in knowing we could be jailed. We go in knowing that.
Yeah.
So that is, you know, it is all to play for. That's why my mother keeps going to me, just stop, you've got three children. I say, I do it because I have three children.
Yes.
And when people understand, we have no choice. If we keep complying with this nonsense, we're all in trouble. We actually have no choice. I realized that early on.
Yeah.
But yes, as you say, there's so few of us, we're vulnerable. We are exposed. The more we need more people to stand up and be brave.
Yeah. I occasionally I look at the newspapers very rarely just to see what you know, how they're spinning things and just to see the latest ruses and wiles. And I was reading this woman who used to be one of my favorite columnist when I used to read newspapers, and she was talking about the sort of the infantilization of our culture and the sort of how twee was infecting everything, you know, adverts and so on. And in the course of this article, she made mockery of the fact that we were celebrating. Did you have this in Ireland, Captain Tom?
No.
Oh.
What's that?
So it was a complete PR stunt. This old boy who'd fought in...
Oh, yes,
yeah.
Yes, I remember now. I was watching it, yeah.
I say he'd fought in World War II. He'd been in World War II. I think he was in India on motorcycles. I don't think he was actually fighting the Japanese at Kohima or anything like that might earn the title hero. But so he went on his Zimmer frame, encouraged by his PR daughter. And he was, he walked, you know, X number of miles for the NHS, and he became this story, and he got, every day there was another Captain Tom story, and it was just so transparent. It was like Stakhanov in the Soviet Union. You know Stakhanov, the guy who built more tractors than any other, he mined more coal than any other one. He was a hero of the Soviet Union. It was exactly the same naked propaganda, and I'm amazed that people fell for it, but they did. But what I found interesting was, okay, so you're making mockery of the Captain Tom story now, 2 years after the event, but it was transparent even at the time. And it seems to me that this is how it's going to work. Even as stories that we knew about 2 years ago, 3 years ago, scandals that we knew so obviously to be the case, they're going to be drip revealed to the public, and everyone's going to go, oh, weren't we idiots for falling for that Captain Tom narrative? Weren't we idiots for allowing ourselves to be not locked down? This is already happening. It's part of the damage limitation exercise. So I'm not sure that I can get too excited about these moments of awakening, because they're kind of like controlled demolitions. Do you not think?
Oh, absolutely. It's like, who's pulling the... It's like I see Malhotra. As wonderful as it was, why did he go on air? Everything was so clear at the beginning with the risk-benefit analysis. So what was he doing on the television promoting it? It didn't make any sense. But now he's doing a sterling job, it has to be said. If he is looking for redemption, I'm sure he's building up the brownie points, because he's doing such a good job getting the information out. But it's too late. That's the problem. All of this time delay reaction, when we knew, this is why I do think we're great, because we wrecked that story too. You see, we're wrecking the narrative. No wonder I'm unpopular. You're not unpopular. I am unpopular.
I think I am unpopular. Come on. Are we going to have an unpopularity contest here?
I'm definitely unpopular. I know you are loved, but no, I mean, but
I'm
delighted.
Right people and hated by the right people. It's great.
Yes, that's it. I'm just delighted to have wrecked that narrative. I mean, it was important work to blow it up in advance, say, nonsense, stupid, break it down. This is the crack here, lads. You know, because, yes, we are getting the time delay, and it is the controlled opposition now. Even GB News, as brilliant as it is, Neil Oliver, like, his monologues are supreme, and delivered with such eloquence. Don't you think... Did Neil Oliver say, don't take the jab? I'm not sure. Where was GB News in advance to all of this? Did it just pop up? Like, I know it's Ofcom regulated, so
I can
it's
see,
a bit odd.
I can see, despite that piece you wrote, which persuaded me for that day, you're like me. You vacillate between the two positions. On the one hand, you think... yeah, this guy's great and everything he says and hero. On the other hand, what's the hidden agenda? What's the...
It's so late. There was a time to do... This is why I liked Professor Dolores Cowell. I don't care what anybody says, because there was a time to stand up, you know, and that was at the beginning. So they're the people I count in my, you know, I go, stand up at the beginning when we needed to say, red alert, something's going on here. The ones who come in after... Everybody's been juiced with the slow release. I'm a little bit more reticent about it. I'm just like,
by the way, okay. Neil Oliver is going to be my special guest at my my next big event. And I wouldn't have, maybe I'm wrong, but I wouldn't have chosen him because I'm very wary of this. I'm very wary of promoting people who I think are secret, you know, quislings or whatever. I think he's just been on a journey. I think like quite a few of us, because it's been really hard, hasn't it? For those of us who have had established careers in the mainstream media, and at first you think, no, this is just crazy shit. There's no way that hang on a second, but 9/11, but blah, and you get this kind of cascade effect. Well, you made the point very well earlier on when you talked about, as journalists, we're really good at assimilating information very quickly and sifting it for what is valuable and what is not. So I think that we've been better able than most people to go on this crash course in rabbit holeology and suss out how things work.
And breakthrough, you seem to break through an awful lot. Like, even starting off the Instagram thing, I'd have somebody from the intensive care unit. You know, I'm a nurse. I worked in intensive care. You're being really out of order talking about medical stuff that you don't have no idea. You're not a doctor. If you saw what happened in the intensive care unit, you wouldn't be talking like that. So, do you know, there was that kind of guilt tripping as well. Now, the thing is, I know all about the intensive care unit. My dad was there and my son was there. I know very well how the medical system works and the industry works. I spent a month in hospital with my son. My dad's in that hospital. I know it's a broken system. It's a broken system that needs fixing, major fixing.
Yeah.
And you see, the thing with the medical system is we're supposed to be so grateful, aren't we? You know, over in the UK, it's clapping for the NHS, you know. Like, that was a level of mockery. What the NHS were doing, they were putting this trial gene therapy injection into people's arms and you're clapping for them and then people are dying. And in Ireland, you have to be very grateful. You know, you're in your very vulnerable position. People might be dying. You know, this is your weakened position, but you have to be grateful. You say anything, you're not grateful, you know, and they've got you there too. And the way I see it is this, no, like, we're journalists. That's what we do. We do it to the best of our ability. Anybody in healthcare, which is a bit ironic, really, that's their job. Do it to the best of their ability. Make sure it's good. And if it's not good, make it better. And it should be patient-centered. Yeah. Like, my dad busted out of hospital there the other day. He's 83. He's had the too many strokes. By the third night, he couldn't get any sleep. He couldn't sleep. And the food wasn't so hot. And they wanted to keep him in for MRI. And he just escaped. He's like, he escaped. Because you can't get out of hospital. You know, this is the thing. You have to be discharged. Once you're in the hospital system, it's like you've handed over your life.
That's right. There's something very dodgy legally about the power that hospitals have over you once you're admitted. It's frightening.
We've seen that with the Baby Will case in New Zealand. Mm. But, you know, even just on a basic level, like my dad, you know, you have to be discharged. You actually lose your rights as a human being. You can't just go, I'm out of here, I've had enough.
How did you get him out?
Well, he was only supposed to be out for 2 hours and he just said, keep going. I'm not
nice
going back.
Nice one. Because they could have midazolamed him, couldn't they?
I think, I said to him, I think your instincts were screaming, get the hell out. I said, sometimes it takes your logic and your brain to catch up. Of course, it caused nothing but controversy. I have three sisters, everybody had an opinion, you know, he needs to stay in there. And I just said, no, no. Even if it is the end, you know.
Is your dad religious? Do you think he hears the voices?
No, not yet. I'm going to go with the Bible now later on. Sit down. And he used to be an altar boy. He knows the Mass in Latin. But he's drifted away from it. I suppose all the controversies with the Catholic Church and child sexual abuse, the hypocrisy of the Church. I have a lot of people in the comments in my Telegram who are very Catholic. And they just say, no, that the Church is infiltrated. That's not what the Church is. So I'm listening. But it would be nice. I'm going to try and get them. Because you need, especially in your last chapter, you need to have some spiritual work done. You need it. We all need it.
Totally. It's the thing that matters most.
It is.
I do find it quite difficult. I think a lot of people do. Trying to decide which team to affiliate yourself with. I mean, you know, I get lots of Catholics saying, come and join the Mother Church. You know you want to. And I'm thinking, well, hang on a second. This Mother Church thing, that's just another, it's like calling the BBC auntie. You know, it's.
But Jesus was never about that. Jesus was never about one true church. He said, I have a relationship. Ask God for help through Jesus Christ. Live a humble life. Ask for what you want. You'll get it. Have faith. Don't be deceived. Don't go along with evil. In fact, stand up and do something about it. Simple, really.
I think so. I think that one's relationship with God is an incredibly personal one, intimate. I've just been learning this brilliant psalm, Psalm 139. O Lord, thou hast searched me out and known me. There's a great line, thou art about my path and about my bed, and spiest out all my ways, And that's exactly it. You've got this. He knows everything about you, and you talk. You can hide nothing from. Which is why lying is completely pointless. I was going to ask you about that. Since you've sort of returned, as it were, do you find it? I find it really hard to lie.
I think that's a 5D thing. I do think it's there's a kind of people say, oh, that's new agey, but there seems to be something to it as well. As I keep my open mind, I do feel whatever is there more light coming in. I'm not sure what it is, but I do think it's going to come to the point where we'll be able to see liars so easily. I'm a terrible liar anyway, you know, so.
Me too.
Not good. Yeah. Don't like it because I just feel you trip yourself up and you get caught out and then you're called a liar. You get it's bad for your reputation, you know. I think it's easier and it's not being a goody-goody two-shoes. I just think you're going to have a better life if you have faith. You got to have faith.
You could almost write a song about that, couldn't you? And it could be a number one hit. Maybe before you die in mysterious circumstances.
Yeah, well, geez, I know. Well, this is it. You need this is it's a high risk gamble game, but I prefer to die with clean hands and clean heart.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know? Because totally. We're only down here passing through anyway.
I wanted to ask you. You mentioned how you'd spend a portion of your life on the celeb circuit, going around to sort of interview rock stars and fashion people. I mean, we're talking about two of the most satanic industries on the planet, if not the. Did you get a whiff of sulfur at all when you were on your travels?
You know, it's all the glitz and the glam. So it was the cameras and the dresses and, you know, who are you wearing kind of thing and hair and makeup. And then the fashion, it was just the trends. So it was all very glitzy. I was on the surface level and I was just kind of skimming by, fly here, fly there, edit, 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 fly here, fly there. So I didn't have a minute to really see. But what I did note when I was doing celebrity interviews is these guys get off the hooks. It's this schmaltzy showbiz shtick where you're supposed to be bezzy mates with them. You know, they come in, you're supposed to be awed. If you start going in hard with the questions, you're not invited back. You're off the list, you know? You've got 5 minutes. And do these guys deserve that? Okay, they're promoting this and that, whatever, right? So it's the remit too. But once you realise just how shady the industry is, you realise these guys are so protected, you know? Even with the interviews, do you ever look at showbiz interviews? Why is it always so schmaltzy? It's embarrassing. Nobody ever asks a hard question, you know, and it's always so buddy-buddy. And we saw with the late night show hosts in the US just how awful they are. Who knew?
Yeah.
And all the comedians. I mean well, it's been
you're not
a
saying
shocker,
that
hasn't it?
James Corden is compromised, are you?
And I interviewed him before and he couldn't be any nicer, so warm, you know, funny. And there he is doing that stupid song, telling people to get the injection. And you just think, wow, so bad. And like Rod Stewart, loved Rod Stewart. One of those interviews where you just come away going, that guy's great crack.
Yeah, yeah.
And then there he was and he wouldn't let anybody into his dinner party unless they were boosted.
Yeah.
And now look, I mean, we don't know. His son did collapse playing soccer. We don't know if it's related. We don't know if it would have happened anyway. But we do know when we read the papers, there is something missing. They're not telling us if the person who collapsed turned blue in the face, the person who got the stroke, the blood clot, the heart attack, the aneurysm, the seizures. They're not telling us one little bit of information. They're not telling us whether that person participated in one of the most deadly human trials of all time. Now, that's not journalism, is it?
No, it's not. It's when did you come to the conclusion that the man with the horns is in charge of all this operation?
It's watching it, isn't it? It's getting to see just how corrupt the world is. Yes, we're in it. You know, it's seeing how easy the corruption flows and how people don't want to know. And I think once you refer to the Bible.
Yeah.
You don't have to be a Bible basher, but if you're interested in life, if you're curious about life, this is a vital book to understand and know. So I think once you refer to that and then look around and assess and cross, again, all the stuff journalists do, cross-reference, it yeah. comes down to this conclusion. You just go, wait a second, this, yes, there is something to this. This isn't just some makey-uppy stuff.
I was thinking that you used the phrase Bible basher there.
Yeah.
Our culture is just full of slightly derogatory phrases for people who are serious, earnest. I hate to be earnest because I think it's a fun thing as well. But people who are honest to God Christians. I mean, you wouldn't get anyone being called a kind of a Led Zeppelin basher or maybe a football fanatic, but that's not necessarily pejorative, is it? In the same way that everything about our culture is designed to make us feel embarrassed about being Christians, about ridiculing anyone who is so primitive, medieval in their outlook as to imagine that there is such a thing as the devil, which is quite clever.
Oh yeah, and that's why, you know, I really appreciate this conversation. In fairness, it's not a conversation you hear too often because there is that embarrassment. It's like it's anti-intellectual. It is like you've got three brain cells fighting each other. If you believe in that, it's like saying I believe in the tooth fairy. But wait, there's more to it than that. It is actually once you've gone through everything. It's like, because as journalists, we've covered all the stories. I've covered all the entertainment stories. I've been at the forecourts down with all the murderers. You know, so you do get to process loads and loads of information. So if it's funny that, you know, after all that information that we're coming down to something and we're going, no, this is, we can break this down into two components here. You know, Jesus, the devil, or good versus evil, or love over fear. You can break it right down. And I can't remember where I was going with that.
Well, it doesn't matter because we can just free will through this. I was listening to this podcast the other night. And it was involving somebody who was incredibly well informed about the history of Freemasonry and about its sort of origins in the Apollonian mysteries and all those cults in the ancient world. And what was missing from the analysis was the key element, which is the spiritual war that you described. It's all very well talking about what the Freemasons do and about speculating on who the black nobility are and about, you know, who are the families that control the world. But unless you understand that that Satan is real and that these people who in different ways, I mean, the music industry, for example, there's a reason why all the aspirant pop stars do the endless iconography of Illuminati hand signals, which are Luciferian in origin. It's not the story about selling your soul to the devil at the crossroads and returned to be able to play the guitar really well and stuff. It's not a metaphor. It's
amazing.
That's the deal.
I know, you just look at these people. I mean, even if you look at Beyonce, like, okay, we won't say whether or not she's made a deal with the devil, who knows, okay? But I used to, you know, look at Beyonce's stories, the struggle, you know, trying to be the best. You'd look at it on one of these, like, E! Entertainment, because I covered entertainment. And then, boom, out of the blue, she's like the biggest star in the world. And next minute she's doing all this stuff, and Jay-Z's doing it with her. And then Jay-Z's with that one Marina Abramovich. And you think, okay, what's going on? And didn't her drummer leave because of extreme witchcraft she cited for her departure? So, you know, something weird is going on. You look at Lady Gaga. I remember reading in the paper she left a bath of blood in a London hotel.
As you do.
The cleaner went in and found a bath of blood. And she's another one hanging around with Marina Abramovich, you know, who does all this spirit cooking. And we have to look at it. We have to grow up now. You know, we've been conditioned through the New Age stuff, which is all part of this satanic thing, really, to only think positive thoughts. So when you're only thinking positive thoughts, for fear that you might, you know, attract some kind of negativity into your world, you let these people off the hook. And we don't know, you know, if the spirit cooking, what they're showing us is as bad as it is. We look at Balenciaga and that the stylist, what's her name, Lulu, whatever her name was. And we look at her Instagram posts, what she was putting out publicly. And you think, oh, no, there's something very bad going, this is very sinister. And then they try to say pedo chic in one sentence. It's like, pedo, sorry, what? Pedo, no, those two words don't go side by side. Never, never will. But you know, it's funny when you talk about Jesus. I mean, after everything I said, put my neck on the block coming out, when I mentioned Jesus, that's when I really got it. It was like, shut up. What are you doing? Why would you mention Jesus? You know, you're just coming across mad. And there was this real visceral anger of like, shut up about Jesus. And that just made me go, no, no, I'm not ashamed of loving Jesus. I'm not ashamed and never will be.
Well, apparently, people who've given themselves over to the dark side cannot even, I mean, they have struggled saying his name. And they certainly, I mean, they choke on it. I did the Lawrence Fox show on GB News the other day, and one of his guests, I think, was a guy who is putting up some kind of Christian monument in Birmingham, and they had a great deal of trouble getting it through the council meeting, and he said some of the councillors their faces were contorted in horror, the horror of like a Satanist, I guess, facing
demonic
his worst demonic.
We're seeing it. It's something about even the transgender thing, why they want to be they. Is this kind of some kind of demonic element? Is it because there's they plural demons? I know that's okay, it's a bit of a stretch, and I don't want to anybody who's transgender are going through a tough time. I wouldn't like to alienate them. Obviously, this is our lesson in unconditional love. But the they thing's a bit weird, isn't it? Why does a singular person want to be called they? Get it?
Yes, exactly. Who's that? What's that pop star's? What's their name?
Which one?
Didn't he win X Factor or something?
Is it they?
Have you noticed? I saw this coming. I've seen this coming because I'm a sort of grumpy reactionary, among other things, and I notice these things, and I notice cultural trends. But obviously when one has children, you listen to their musical, the music they're listening to, and you kind of despise it because it's a bit rubbish. And I mean, I think pop music has got a lot worse. It's got not only objectively worse, but it's also got much more overt in its devilish symbolism and stuff, satanic symbolism. But one thing I noticed is that male pop singers in the last 20 years have got much, much more effeminate, emasculated. There is no manliness in pop stars anymore at all. I mean, okay, maybe they were a bit camp, you know, David Bowie, etc., etc. But at least you did have proper manly stars as well. I mean, Johnny Cash, for example, was a, you know, he was a man's man. And the women have become much more transhuman, that they've become like these things, these creatures that aren't really female, that their voices are very heavily treated, and they all sort of aspire after this, or rather than maybe their producers aspire after a particular sound, which is designed to kind of dehumanize them, make them almost like sex robots. Have you noticed that?
Oh, it's like blow up. It's kind of the Kardashians started it, really, you know. Yeah. I mean, remember in the 80s, being a sellout was like the worst thing you could be.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, you don't sell out. Just because there's a price and everything doesn't mean you sell it. And then the Kardashians came along and everybody became a sellout. It was like fake hair, fake nails, fake face, fake tits, fake ass, fake skin. You don't even have your own skin. Everything was fake, and fake personality. And then it's like, hi guys, I'm just putting on my, you know, my Contour, you can buy this here, get a 10% discount, like and subscribe. And then we were getting this meh, non-personalities coming through. Like, where are the characters anymore? You know, the big, big characters. So, yeah, it's like this transhumanist thing where plastic surgery's got an awful lot to do with it too. Because it's this fakery. It's like the fake world versus the natural world. And now I'm not against anybody. Sometimes I feel like getting a load of plastic surgery myself. You know, when you're getting older and you look in the mirror and you're like, geez, I could fix this and fix that. You could go on and on and on. So I'm not condemning anybody who's got it done. I completely understand. When I was growing up, it was Pamela Anderson on the telly. I just wanted to get myself a pair of them. I was 15. I was like, where can I buy those things? I can want to go and get them. If I'd had the money, I probably would have run out.
You'd have regretted it. I think you would.
I probably would have.
You couldn't go for a jog again, could you?
I know, but when you're 15, this is how, you know what I mean? You are, you look at your idols, you look at what they've had. And this is why the Kardashians were like big business for plastic surgery and that whole industry as well.
What about that bottom? That is weird, isn't it? How big is that bottom and who likes that? That is sick.
It just brought on the whole likes and validation, you know, fake, 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 and the dumbing down. This is what happened. I remember when the Kardashians came, I was like, I'm really uncomfortable with this. And then it was like, you're just being mean. Mm. You're just being, she's right to fix it, you know. If you're not happy with it, fix it. I was like, okay, well, yeah, okay. And then I'd listen to the conversation. I'm like, that's just so stupid. And then it's like, well, you're being negative and you're being mean. And then we get like Love Island on the telly and you're like, is this where we're at? Are we really here? And yeah. And then we got so dumbed down when it came to passing the most dumbed down IQ test. Nobody passed it.
No.
We freaking passed it.
Okay. But isn't there a clue? Again, I mean, there are so many clues in the Bible about this. If we believe, as we do, that man is made in God's image, and that we have one of the wonderful things, one of the wonderful facets of that, is that we also have, not only are we all beautiful, we just, you know, in different ways, but also we have this perfect immune system, which is designed to operate without needing big pharma to inject us with stuff to make us healthier. And without a food industry to give us this adulterated crap. I mean, it's all there. It's all there in the world that God created. We are made in his image. And you look at what's happened in modern culture. We've got people trying to dabble, to change how they look with Botox, with plastic surgery, with all these trickery. That we've got a medical industry which is tinkering with something that works really well without being tinkered with. We've got food products being adulterated through things like GM and so on, genetically modified. I mean, it's. Have you read C.S. Lewis's That Hideous Strength?
No, is it good?
It's a bit crap as a novel. It's a bit messy, okay. but the ideas are really, really good at it. What he's describing is essentially the Luciferian agenda, which is the Tower of Babel. It's about trying to replace God. And I mean, in fact, David Bowie talked about this in his song "The Savior Machine." You know, because all these pop stars were working for the wrong side. That it's about replacing God. That's what it comes down to. It's about replacing God.
Yeah,
that's what they want to do.
This is how simple it is, really. And you know what was Jesus about? He was born in a stable. You know, he wasn't wearing all the fancy gear. He traveled around a donkey, you know. Didn't have the best steed. You know, fed his followers fish and bread. You know, it was really humble stuff. He's all about being humble. And, you know, it's a lesson for all of us. All of us who believe as well, we have to remind ourselves to be humble, like, every day. And sometimes I really fail badly at it. I don't know if I'm in with Jesus, you know, but at least I do acknowledge him. I acknowledge him and I acknowledge. And there are times, you know, when you get those beautiful moments when you're looking at trees or you're looking at something and you just feel love. And
yeah.
It's just a kind of a natural, it's very natural. and you just say thank you.
Yeah.
That's it. You know, our life is actually simple, but I think it's overcomplicated. You know, I think people have been bamboozled. They've been put into a financial bind. This is what these guys do.
The beast system, that's what it is.
Yeah. So you get backed into a financial corner. You think there's no way out. And now I'm practicing this as well, where Jesus would say, well, have some faith. Have faith. And I do have faith, but it's, again, it's a practice, you know. I mean, the faith has brought me this far. I mean, I live on hope, and, you know, half the time, and faith. But I wouldn't do it any other way either. You know, if somebody said to me, we'll give you all this money and you can promote the injection and you can live in a big mansion and you can drive that car, I'd be like, no, because I don't crave all of that anyway, you know.
Oh.
Because it's not it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm. I mean, that's what he talks about, isn't it? In the lilies of the field and the birds of the air and so on. He's constantly enjoining you not to worry about money. And
yes. It's hard though, isn't it?
Of course it is. And I also think that I was thinking back to what you were saying about how you went through your Christian phase and then you kind of went out into the world. And had a bit of, you know, did your partying and stuff. And I was much the same. And I think that he recognizes that maybe we need a bit of party time before he calls us back. And maybe the party time years taught us lessons and enabled us to walk in the world and bring the message to people that we, in a way that we might not have done credibly had we not seen the world. Do you see what I mean?
Oh, well, this, like, Jesus wasn't a goody-goody two-shoes. It's not like he was just hanging out with the people who were, you know, godly. He was hanging out with everybody, the rich and the poor, you know, the criminals, the demonic. I mean, it's very interesting, the Bible, the way he's, you know, the way they talk about the possessed all the time. I think we need to be learning about exorcisms again.
Oh, totally. Well, have you listened to my two Jerry Marzinski podcasts?
Is he the psychiatrist?
Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah. I loved it. That was a turning point. I thought they were fantastic. So, really well done.
So I think that those podcasts have changed a lot of people's minds.
Very much so.
Because what they do is illustrate very clearly the demonic realm. Yeah. And I think once you're onto the demonic realm, you then understand about the true nature of the world, that it's not just you get beyond the materium. I think most people, and we've been encouraged to do so, live in the materium. They just imagine that this is it, and you know, you live and you die, and you know, the one with the most toys wins. That's what somebody said to me when I was a child. You know, and it ain't like that. It ain't like that.
No.
But we've been encouraged. It's perfectly understandable that so many people think that like this because we've been taught it.
Yeah, you have to break through it. I mean, again, you have to want to find God. You have to want to find something worthwhile, something of value to your life and your existence. You have to seek it out and you have to want. But again, it's an ethical issue. We know we have a moral compass. We know we have an internal reading when something's right or wrong. And we know when we've done wrong. Whether you want to call that demonic or the devil's influence, whatever it is, it can also simply be right from wrong. And we know exactly when we've done it. We know.
Yeah, yeah. Hmm. But it seems quite simple to me. I bumped into an old friend the other day, and she was saying how pleased she was that she'd recently persuaded her children to be confirmed. And we used to bump into it in church a lot when I took my children to church, you know, when they were, well, partly to get them into a Church of England school, you know, because they were better. Anyway, and they had a good grounding as well. But I was talking to her about the God thing, and she looked at me and said, "Oh, I'm still trying." You know, it hasn't. And I was thinking, hang on a second. So you go to church and you encourage your children to go to church, but you haven't found God. Surely the deal is you just ask and he gives. I mean, isn't that how you found it to be the case?
Not always. No, I mean, I do struggle too. I have to say I do. It's not so straightforward with me. But when I break it down again, it's like my internal reading. I am trying to have a relationship with them, but sometimes I say, give me a sign. Can I have a sign? And then I don't get one, or else maybe I don't see it. So I am not quite there, but I put in the practice. I do know I can see karmic retribution. I can see things play out. You know, I can use my senses. I know that God is love. I know that love does conquer all and overrides things. But I have a bit of a, I still have a way to go, I have to say.
Well, okay, but maybe there's always going to be a germ of doubt, because that's what you need to drive you to work harder and to be better. Maybe.
Yeah. Maybe that's where the faith comes in. You know, have faith. I do have faith. Like, that's why it was never really a big deal for me to make the decision, because I thought, no, I have faith in truth, speaking the truth. I have faith in, transparency. I have faith in love. I have faith in the virtues. I have great faith in those things. So it's, I don't wrestle with like, oh, should I do this? It's like, no, my faith is in those things, which I would connect to God. But the idea of what God is, I don't know. I don't know what it is. So we have Jesus who came down. But again, you know, I still question the story, but
you shouldn't. Have you not seen the podcast about the, I mean, one shouldn't cheat, actually, because we are supposed to be, it's supposed to be faith rather than proof and all that. But have you not seen the podcast done by about the Turin Shroud?
No.
Oh,
is that a hoax?
No, it's totally not.
Oh,
no.
Really?
Well, look, we've already established that the people, the rulers of the darkness in this world, the people, you know, spiritual wickedness in high places and all that, they've contrived to hide the truth from the people. So obviously, one thing they're going to target is the church. They're going to infiltrate that. Another thing they're going to do is they're going to take the prime object that proves almost beyond doubt that Jesus rose from the dead. What are they going to do? They're going to pour scorn on it. They're going to say, "Oh yeah, we've done these special tests on the, you know, we've carbon dated the cloth and it's a medieval forgery and blah 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 blah." Of course they're going to do that, but no, the Turin Shroud is definitely. He was there for 3 days. It was folded in the way it was described. There have been some medieval additions to the cloth, sort of restoration, which were the ones that did the cut. But no, definitely, the image that is imprinted on it could not have been faked. It's real.
Well, when I asked my little pendulum, was he here? The pendulum goes swing. It's just on its own, goes swinging around.
You're going to get. Actually, you won't get in such trouble with some. I guarantee there will be Christian viewers who say, "Does she not realize?"
I do realize. I do read the Bible.
Devils.
That's why I'm like.
They're devils.
And I was listening to an astrologer the other day. Then, because I don't even think our idea of space is all. I mean, I just don't believe anything anymore. You know, everything's up on its head for me. So then I was asking, "Is that okay?" I don't know. I mean, I do. See, the thing is, we need help. Like, we do. We all need help. I don't want to be on my own. I want the connection with God. I want it so badly, you know. And that's the only thing that's worth living for. And it's the only thing worth dying for, really.
Oh, yeah. The alternative is unthinkable. Like, eternity is a long time. So you definitely want to get your ducks in a row there. No. I'm totally with you. I think what a lot of Christians, the kind that are looking at, you know, minding your business and trying to tell you how to be better and stuff, I think what a lot of them don't take into account is that God is kind of forgiving. You know, he does recognize that we are made of human clay, and he does give us a bit of leeway to make honest mistakes. See, I don't think he's going to be thinking, "I will strike Aisling down because she has used the pendulum of evil." He's not going to do that. It's not, and particularly not in his Jesus manifestation. I mean, look at Jesus. He's okay. So he's quite hardcore. If a fig tree does not give him fruit, he causes
he cursed it.
Yeah, he
that
cursed
was a bit
it.
Nasty.
So
yeah.
he's quite righteous in his wrath, but nevertheless, he is endlessly loving and endlessly forgiving. you've just got to kind of ask.
Yeah, but even in the Bible, he was getting fed up. He was like, oh, how much longer must I put up with you? Do you hear him, like, in the Bible, when the disciples are, you know, squabbling over something or trying to say, what did he mean with his parable? And he's kind of muttering to himself, how much longer must I put up with you? So, there, you know, he had a personality too, by all accounts. But
he was pretty cool. I'd love to have met him, wouldn't you?
I'd love to have met him too. But you can only imagine, like, even if, let's imagine there were spaceships and there were aliens, and I don't even think they exist. I don't know.
No.
But let's pretend, okay? And they were watching us and they were looking for intelligent life down here. I mean, it's not looking very good for us, is it? If they were watching us and how we operate.
Well, I think it does go back to that thing that we've established, that if you accept that this, by God's permission, is the realm of...
By God's permission, yeah.
With the realm, is the realm of the Prince of Lies, and we've been given this because that is the deal. That's how we get this thing called free will. And the devil's really good at his job and can persuade most people using sex, drugs, rock and roll. Because, you know, he was in charge of music before he was cast out of heaven. Lucifer. Lucifer was in charge of music. So which is why, you know, Mick Jagger does his thing. You know, why Jimmy Page can play those riffs on Stairway to Heaven. It's because, like, the devil has the best tunes. Except I don't think the devil wrote Bach. I think Bach was probably godly rather than...
Yeah, I don't know. Devil. You see, it gets confusing, doesn't it? I mean, and we all love a bit of rock and roll and the Rolling Stones. And, like, it's very confusing. Where do you delineate? Like, you know, if you're tapping your toe to sympathy with the devil?
Well, Ashley, wait a second. Wait a second. If sin were just not tempting, if it were just... If sex and drugs and rock and roll were just really boring... None of us would go for it. We'd all be going to church. So of course this stuff's got to be really good. Of course music's got to be. Of course Led Zeppelin's got to be like the best, pretty much, hasn't it? Otherwise,
I just get confused. I do get very confused about it all. With that, now that is confusing because you just think, well, that's maestro work. It's great. Is it really demonic? And then you look, say, we like with the Catholic Church. All we had was like this hypocrisy, you know, we had this major hypocrisy. I know it was infiltrated. I do understand that. But, you know, with institutional religion. So again, it's like, and I suppose it's all about developing a relationship with God. It's just developing a relationship.
Exactly. It is.
You don't have to be too much of a goody-goody two-shoes either, do
no,
you?
No, not
you
know? At all. Not least because I mean, one of the things I keep saying is you don't want to frighten the horses. My mission is to make other people want to follow my path. The path that I've taken to God, and therefore I don't want to be somebody look at me and go, well, he's a dick, he's boring, he's just like, no, yeah. That's not going to work. Yeah. I honestly think that's part of my job, and I think it's your job as well. I mean, you know, you come across really, really well. If I were looking, if I were God, and I were thinking, who on earth is you know, batting for my team in a way that I think, yes, well played. He'd be saying it about you, so I wouldn't worry on that score. I really wouldn't.
I hope so. Please, God.
My computer's running out of battery. I've got like 5% left because I'm doing it on my laptop because I have to go and into another room to do it, like a bit like you.
Yes. So come here and do my rebel work.
I think we've had a. I've loved talking to you. I really have. Tell people where they can find you. Well, if you want to be found.
Yeah, well, I'm on Telegram. I think it's Aisling O-L, A-I-S-L-I-N-G-O-L. If you can find me, I can never find me on it. I try and get my sister or whatever on. I can never find myself. I can't really figure out Telegram. If you can find me, it's Aisling O'Loughlin or Aisling O-L, I think, on Telegram. Otherwise, I'm just kind of wafting around, you know, trying to get the word out and trying to be counter-narrative and to just speak the truth freely and plainly so that, you know, that it might resonate with somebody. And I know some people say, well, the truth is subjective. No, it's not. It's objective. You know, there totally. Is the truth. What? So, because this is part of the New Age thing, they say, well, that's your truth. I'm like, no. Well, hold on a second. There's the truth.
You know? What? You're not a leprechaun, obviously, because there's boys, aren't they? What a girl leprechaun? What's the Irish equivalent of, what would you be?
Well, there's the fairies.
You're a fairy.
The fairy.
You're a good fairy.
Big fairy, but we'll go with that. Yeah, well, let's go. I don't know what I am. I'm still searching. I'm a searcher. I'm looking for answers.
Now my light is telling me that
you all know, right, it's time to wrap it up. Listen, it's been a pleasure. I've really enjoyed talking to you, and thank you for bringing up Jesus, man. I think that's really cool. Because I do think it's central to the whole story. And well done you. Well done on everything you've done.
It is the only thing. So yeah. and likewise, well done you. Well, Aisling, it's been an absolute joy. May I say to my beloved viewers and listeners, I've mentioned this before, but it can't be said often enough. The enemy is trying to close people like me down. This is how I earn my living. And the payment processes are making it much, much harder for you to get your money to me. So whether you use Locals, Subscribestar, Substack, or Patreon, it doesn't really matter. You're just trying to support me, aren't you? I mean, never mind the perks. I mean, there's a sort of perks list, but yeah, you don't really care about that. You just want to give me support. So please go on doing that. I think I'm going to do a new thing where I can just give you my bank details and you can just send me some dosh as well, and you can buy me a coffee. That's good. I quite like my being bought coffees by people. Thank you very much for your support. And Aisling, again, absolute joy. And let's do another one sometime. We should.
Would love that. Thank you, James. Have a Merry Christmas too. Have a great.
Oh, and you. Yes.
And you know, don't mention. Okay, do mention the thing. But just, we have to go lightly, don't we? We have to go lightly when we mention it.
Oh, I was thinking. I was thinking you were talking about Satan Claus. Don't mention Satan Claus.
Well, the vaccine. But anyway, I was kind of thinking the vaccine. We'll mention Jesus. It's his birthday after all.
It is. Exactly. All right. Happy Christmas.
Take care.
Bye.